I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Pushing for Peace, an update on the efforts for a ceasefire deal between Hezbollah and Israel. Moving on, a Catholic senator is leaving Capitol Hill for a new role in the Hoosier state. We hear more from Republican Mike Braun. Talking turkey, President Biden takes part in a long-standing Thanksgiving tradition at the White House. Plus, crowning achievement. Pope Francis reminds the faithful of the power of speaking the truth. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Catherine of Alexandria. Our top story tonight, two major cases against President-elect Donald Trump have been dropped. Special Counsel Jack Smith asked a federal judge to dismiss the cases today. The first involved election interference. Prosecutors accused Trump of being part of a criminal conspiracy to hold on to power after the 2020 election. The second was a case over classified documents. President-elect Trump was accused of hoarding top-secret documents that prosecutors said jeopardized national security. Special Counsel Jack Smith cited Justice Department policy that shields sitting presidents from prosecution. The president-elect's legal team weighed in on social media, with Stephen Chung writing, quote, "Today's decision ends the unconstitutional federal cases against President Trump and is a major victory for the rule of law." And joining us now with analysis is Jim Trusty, former Trump attorney and a former federal prosecutor. Jim, great to be with you today. A lot to get to, but first, your reaction to the special counsel dropping the cases.
Yeah, similar to Steve Chung's comment. I mean, these were cases that I kind of lived as they were breaking in 22 and 23. And they were just wrong. They were inventive. They were examples of lawfare. They were historic in their individualized treatment of President Trump compared to any other president. So I'm happy to see them go. I think it's an interesting moment because you could have foreseen a situation where Jack Smith was a dead ender, was bitterly hanging on until the attorney general fired him. But he went to the OLC, the Office of Legal Counsel at DOJ, which is not the same as a court's precedent, but they do have some sort of influence on policy within DOJ. And they said it's very clear from two opinions that there was no prosecution to be had of a sitting president either now or in the future. So it's a great ending. I think it's lawfare collapsing of its own weight. And I wish he had never had to go through it, President Trump, but I'm glad to see this outcome.
Yeah. And how significant really is this development and the timing of it? And what does it mean for President-elect Trump?
Well, you know, it clears the decks in a great way. I mean, there are still state cases that are bumbling around, again, with, I think, a very individualized, inventive treatment of him. But to have them completely clear before we even get to December is a good thing. Now, I will say that tactically, I do think that the incoming attorney general should view this almost like the Black Sox scandal in baseball. Come in and say, I'm going to look at some of this and I'm going to treat it harshly. Because I do think there was a lot of unethical conduct that accompanied these investigations. So I know as a nation, we kind of get tired of investigating the investigators. But I do think that, you know, in some ways, maybe this is a tactic to say, let's end it. Please don't look any closer. When I think the attorney general and the FBI have a lot to look at in terms of how they conducted themselves in this case.
Yes, certainly. Well, the case was, you know, dismissed against the president-elect. Jack Smith is still requesting that the appeal remain in place for two of Trump's employees who pleaded not guilty to obstruction charges. Can you tell us more about this, Jim?
Yeah, it's a real disappointing component of this. You know, Walt Nauta and Carlos de Oliveira are salt-of-the-earth guys that work for President Trump, that do kind of the grunt work. They're not political figures. And I think what was clear from the way I saw this investigation was they were being pressured every way conceivable by the Department of Justice to try to get them to flip against President Trump, that they overstated the criminal liability that these two men faced. And they're still clinging to it in an effort to essentially go to the 11th Circuit and hope they can overturn Judge Cannon in what for President Trump is an exhibition ruling. It doesn't matter at all for President Trump. So the thought that these two guys are facing a criminal prosecution for essentially not flipping against the president is a terrible thing. And I have to think that when we get to January, there may be two very quick pardons if needed at that point for these two individuals.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Jim, great to be with you today. So thankful for your insights.
Sure, great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Our president-elect Donald Trump completes his cabinet picks, naming the key people that he wants to join his administration, many of whom will be familiar to EWTN viewers based on our previous interviews. President-elect Donald Trump nominates Brooke Rollins to serve as Agriculture Secretary. After playing a role in his first administration, she helped to lead the America First Policy Institute, also known as AFPI. Rollins earlier told us that President Trump will continue to put the country first.
His heart and his passion for America continues unabated, and I think he understands that there's a lot of pain across the country right now based on the current administration's policies.
Scott Turner also worked with AFPI after serving in the first Trump administration. Now Turner is nominated to lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development. He once told us about the important role that faith leaders can play.
And faith leaders have the heartbeat of what's going on in the community. They understand the pain, both from a family standpoint, from a business standpoint, from a community standpoint.
Other top picks include billionaire Scott Bessent as Treasury Secretary, Dr. Dave Weldon as Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and Dr. Jeanette Nashawat as U.S. Surgeon General. But Democrats question some of Trump's choices.
Because the Republicans in the Senate are having to contort themselves into pretzel twists trying to explain why some of these people who have never run anything in their lives are qualified to be the most powerful people in our government.
Senator James Lankford says the Senate will review Trump's nominations after January 3rd when the new Congress is sworn in. Well, new poll finds that President-elect Donald Trump is starting on a positive note, with most Americans approving of how he has handled his cabinet picks. The CBS News YouGov survey finds that 59% of Americans approve of Trump's handling of the transition, while 41% disapprove. Meanwhile, the poll also shows a majority of Americans are reacting positively to Trump's win, as 31% say they are happy that he won, with another 24% saying they are satisfied with his victory over Vice President Kamala Harris. As President-elect Donald Trump prepares to return to the White House, he faces a number of conflicts abroad. One of the biggest is the war in Ukraine. A church leader from the war-torn country recently spoke with EWTN News in Depth's Catherine Hadro about his invitation to the president-elect.
I had a chance to chat very briefly with President Trump before the election, and I encouraged him to go there immediately. And I think if he went now before the inauguration, for example, with a group of religious leaders on a humanitarian mission, he would see for himself what is happening on the ground.
Archbishop Gutsiak says that he had the discussion with Trump prior to the election at the Al Smith dinner. The archbishop said despite the large crowd and commotion, Trump took the time to listen to the request. However, a formal request is being prepared. A ceasefire deal between Israel and the militant group Hezbollah could be within reach. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said he agrees with the deal in principle. The Israeli cabinet will vote on the issue tomorrow. Since October 7, 2023, Israeli troops and Hezbollah militants have traded fire almost daily. Then, this past October, Israel launched a ground invasion into southern Lebanon. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a Catholic senator who is heading home. We talked to Senator Mike Braun about his time in the Senate and the big job waiting for him back home. And the Holy Father has a special message for the youth of the world while he's telling them to be careful about makeup. Turning now to Romania, where an independent right-wing candidate has secured the first round of the presidential election with more than 99% of the votes counted. Ceilan Georgescu is ahead with around 23% of the vote. He is known as a TikTok candidate after using the social media platform to galvanize support and call for an end to aid for Ukraine. He also sounded a skeptical note on Romanian NATO membership. Georgescu will face off against reformist Elena Lascani in a runoff on December 8th. If she wins, Lascani will be Romania's first female president. Well, lawmakers on Capitol Hill recently passed a resolution supporting ethnic and religious minorities in Iraq. This comes 10 years after the violent attacks from ISIS displaced more than 150,000 Christians.
They have been subjected to countless atrocities and genocide over the last decade at the hands of ISIS terrorists. They have been displaced from their homes, coerced into converting their religion, tortured, and forced into slavery. Churches and other religious sites have been destroyed, and they still face discrimination for their beliefs.
This resolution is not just about remembering the past. It is about supporting a future where these communities can thrive once again. It emphasizes the importance of rebuilding, not just physically, but also restoring the cultural and historic sites that are central to their identity.
Well, the resolution is now in the Senate, which could take it up as early as next week when Congress returns from its Thanksgiving break. And for more, we turn now to David Trimble, president of the Religious Freedom Institute. David, great to be with you today. Tell us more about this resolution, and what does it signal to you that it has bipartisan support in the House?
Well, great to be with you as well. And, you know, I want to congratulate Representative Slotkin for introducing and getting this resolution passed in the House. It's very, very timely. Unfortunately, with all that is going on in the world, there's been a sense in which these communities that faced the atrocity crimes and the war crimes and the genocide perpetrated by ISIS are still struggling to survive. These are ethnic and religious minorities across northern Iraq and the Nineveh Plain and Kurdistan, including the Yazidis, Turkmen, Shabak, Sabaean, Mandaeans, and many others, including the historic indigenous Christian churches. And they are disappearing. They are disappearing. And our work that was begun a number of years ago under the H.R. 390, the Iraq and Syria Genocide Relief and Accountability Act, to which this resolution points, needs to be revitalized, picked up, and begun again rigorously.
Yeah, it's really important. David, what's been the reaction in Iraq, especially within the Christian communities?
Well, I think it's been encouraging. They're encouraged to see Congress taking note again of this struggle to survive. But they're wanting to see more demonstration of engagement and actual interaction with the faith communities there. As I mentioned, I think the real value in H.R. Resolution 554 is that it points us back to existing policy mandates across the U.S. government for acting in concert with and on behalf of the faith communities in Iraq. So there's encouragement, but there's a need for more action.
For sure. And you mentioned a little bit about what life is like for the Christian communities in Iraq. Can you go into a little bit more detail for those who aren't familiar with the struggles over there?
Well, the struggles are multifold. I mean, the economy is suffering, and we still need more jobs within the economy. Even rebuilding the homes and reestablishing the communities and providing a sense of security in an unstable region is absolutely essential. And that's one of the things that we must address, both immediately and in the new administration. And that is addressing the hardline policies of Iranian influence in the area that are destabilizing the area and almost preventing Christians from returning home to their communities, even if they wanted to.
Yeah, and David, before I let you go, what would you like to see the incoming Trump administration do in this instance?
Well, I think very specifically, and again, 554 points us right back there. H.R. 390 is still existing statutory law, and it mandates multi-agency participation by the U.S. government with USAID, with the Department of Defense, and with the State Department to act in concert to develop policy and implement policies that strengthen these religious communities in the Middle East. We must do that. The new administration needs to reengage those policies and move them forward again immediately in January.
David, good to be with you. Thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you very much.
Our Congress will be ending its session in a few weeks on schedule to wrap up just before Christmas, and that means dozens of lawmakers will be leaving as well, including Catholic Republican Senator Mike Braun of Indiana. But he is not leaving politics. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with more. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. It's great to be with you. Yes, pro-life Senator Mike Braun is leaving the Senate after only one term, but he won't be stepping out of the limelight. He's been elected governor of his home state of Indiana. I recently caught up with Senator Braun, who says he's happy with what he's been able to accomplish here in Washington.
We got more legislation passed than any freshman Senate office over the last 6 years. Education, health care, agriculture. Started a climate caucus, so the conservatives are involved in that discussion and getting conservative legislation passed.
Before coming to the Senate, Mike Braun started a small business, founding what is now Meyer Distributing, a multi-million dollar company hauling truck and automotive specialty products, marketing and distribution. As governor, he tells me he's looking forward to showing Indiana what a businessman can do.
I'll go back to setting the agenda, getting along with the legislature, and I want to show what an entrepreneurial conservative can do to fix kitchen table issues.
He adds he also wants to focus on health care costs and be a model for other states.
We got some of the highest health care costs in the country. Fixed it in my own business 16 years ago and got healthier employees that are health care consumers. I give them wellness tools. I want to do that into our own state employees and try to get Indiana where it's not dominated by big insurance and big hospitals, but where we bring practitioners back into play.
And other things he wants to do as governor?
Like workforce, education, rural broadband, child care, affordable housing. That's kind of what I did many years in building a business.
Senator Braun also tells me his Catholic faith has played a major role in his life. Putting the Lord first is essential.
Well, I ask for guidance every day. It's a blessing that you get the opportunity to do this. And I know who I thank for that. And I've been blessed to be raised in a family where faith was very important, along with family and the community you're from. I always run on faith, family, and community. Throw a little freedom and opportunity in there, you can't go wrong.
I asked him his advice for new lawmakers. He said, be practical. He says life actually allows you to work across the aisle, and that's what they should be doing up in Congress. Braun says that he'll be sworn in as Indiana's 52nd governor on January 13th, 2025. But just a great man with some great ideas there for Indiana, Tracy.
Absolutely. And congratulations to him, and we'll be praying for him
yes.
in his new position. Thank you so much, Eric. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, it is a miracle. The Vatican releases new details about Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, and it involves the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Plus, Pope Francis celebrates Christ the King and World Youth Day, the helpful advice he gave to children. We now know the miracle that paves the way to canonization for Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. Today, the Vatican released the details about the miracle. A seminarian who damaged his Achilles tendon was praying a novena to Frassati. Midway through, he felt a tremendous warmth in his ankle. He then went to the orthopedic surgeon, who, after seeing the MRI, said, "You must have a friend in heaven." That's because everything was healed. Frassati will be canonized during the Jubilee of Youth next August. Well, the Vatican announces plans for the Holy Father's next apostolic trip in December. Pope Francis is set to travel to Corsica. He'll be the first sitting pope to visit the Mediterranean island, famous for being Napoleon's birthplace. The apostolic journey is set for December 15th. The Holy Father will attend a conference on popular piety in the Mediterranean. And the motto of the visit is "Jesus went about doing good from the Acts of the Apostles." The Holy Father's schedule includes an afternoon mass in one of the historical squares and the Angelus prayer joined by the clergy. Pope Francis reminds the faithful that Christ is the King of the universe, who also made himself into a servant for all of us. And his Sunday address at the Vatican, the Holy Father reflected on the dialogue between Jesus and Pontius Pilate. He emphasized that Christ's kingship is radically different from the worldly power. While Pilate's world is one where the strong triumph over the weak, the Pope says that Jesus is the ruler of the eternal world, the kingdom of heaven. Well, the Holy Father also issued a message to young people yesterday on the solemnity of Christ the King. Pope Francis urged young Catholics to reject superficial acclaim and instead embrace authentic Christian life. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittergren has more.
God loves you just as you are and not as you appear. This is what Pope Francis told the young Catholics gathered in St. Peter's Basilica on Sunday for the 39th World Youth Day, which takes place every year on the solemnity of Christ the King in local churches. In his homily, the Holy Father addressed the pervasive pressure of social media and societal acclaim and reminded the youth that their dignity is not for sale.
Non truccatevi l'anima, non truccatevi il cuore.
Do not put makeup over your soul, and do not put makeup over your heart. Be, as you are, sincere and transparent. Do not be stars for a day, on social media or in any other context. You are called to shine in a wider sky. In heaven, the infinite love of the Father is reflected in many little lights.
Against this backdrop of global challenges, Pope Francis also emphasized the vital role of young people in bearing witness to Christ's message of joy, peace, and hope. At the end of the Mass, young people from Portugal gave the World Youth Day cross to youth from South Korea, the host of the next World Youth Day in Seoul in 2027. The Portuguese youth also presented him with an icon of Mary, known as the Salus Populi Romani, the protection of the Roman people, based on the famed icon in the Basilica of St. Mary Major in Rome, and that is the source of great personal devotion to the Pope.
This too is a sign. It is an invitation to all of us to live out the gospel and take it to every part of the world, without stopping, without being discouraged, getting up after every fall and never ceasing to hope. Indeed, the theme of the message for today's celebration is, those who hope in the Lord shall run and not be weary.
The Holy Father explained that the hope is for many young people to become tireless missionaries of joy and to continue their courageous witness to Christ. In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, back here in the United States, President Joe Biden kicks off his final White House holiday season with the annual turkey pardon.
I hereby pardon Peach and Blossom.
The turkeys were raised in Minnesota and traveled to D.C. for the special occasion. They will return to live out their days in southern Minnesota. At the event, Biden also talked about the end of his term as president. He said, "It has been the honor of my life. I am forever grateful." Well, finally tonight, the official 2024 Christmas tree has arrived at the White House. First Lady Jill Biden received it earlier today alongside military-connected families.
So good afternoon.
All right, take a look at the video. This year's tree is 18 and a half feet tall, a Fraser fir from Newland, North Carolina. It will stand floor to ceiling in the blue room of the White House. The tree is called Tremendous by the Kartner family, who grew it on their farm to, quote, represent everything good about humanity and showcase the resilience of communities across Western North Carolina affected by Hurricane Helene. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.